Good afternoon, everyone. We'd like to welcome you to the Mesa City Council study session for April the 16th. The first item on our agenda for this meeting is to review the agenda for tonight's council meeting upstairs. So, council, if you'd please take a look at that document. Just for your information, we do have a couple of awards to give away today at the beginning of the meeting, just acknowledging Fair Housing Month. Actually, not awards, proclamations, acknowledging Fair Housing Month and Arbor Day. But other than that, currently everything's on the consent agenda. So let's make sure we want to keep it that way. Council, any questions about purchase contracts?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Do you have a question?
No.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh. Okay. All right.
His Wi-Fi isn't holding right.
That's right.
That's it.
It's like talking to somebody on CNN. It takes 3 or 4 seconds before they respond.
Yeah.
That's right. All right. So, purchase contracts, resolutions, and public hearings. Not seeing anyone that wants to take anything off the consent agenda, so we'll keep it as is unless something changes between now and 5:45. The big item on our agenda today is to hear a presentation and provide direction on the fire and medical department budget. Candace, are you going to kick us off here?
I am.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Council. We actually have a two-part presentation this afternoon. So I'm going to reintroduce our strategic data analytics team. So with me is Shalay Stedman and Mark Castleton are back in front of you again. Kind of a continuation with what they came with you last time to talk about our large project that we're working on with the Fire and Medical Department staff. And then when we're done, shouldn't take us too long to go through these slides. Just a couple slides, and then the fire department will come up and actually give their budget presentation. So with that, I'm just going to let Shalay take it.
All right. Good afternoon. I've been asked to provide a brief update of the analysis we have been doing with Mesa's Fire and Medical Department. Today, we'll continue the conversation from last time and start talking about response to the demand of fire and emergency medical services, highlighting unit call volumes and response time. There we go. All right. As you may recall, we showed you this heat map in our last presentation. This map shows you the density of incidents in 2017. Green represents light call volume, 0 to 25 incidents per year. Yellow-orange represents medium call volume, 26 to 250 incidents per year. Red-black represents heavy call volume, over 250 incidents per year. We can now convert that map and show where each incident took place and in what station's area it happened. We can then get the call volumes per area. Starting with the areas with the least amount of calls, areas 15, 16, and 19 have less than 1,000 unit responses per medical, fire, and extrication calls. The areas highlighted in green have 1,000 to 2,000 calls. Yellow are areas with 2,000 to 3,000 calls. Orange, 3,000 to 4,000 calls. Red has 4,000 to 5,000 calls. And our busiest areas, 1 and 3, with more than 5,000 calls. To give those numbers some context, west of Gilbert Road has 50% of the fire, medical, and extrication calls, but only has 36% of the heavy apparatus, which is your ladders and engines, and 35% of the stations, and only 24% of the area in the city of Mesa. So another way to look at our response is by how quickly we get to the scene. Response time is key for the fire and medical department, as fires tend to double in size every 2 minutes, and things just get twice as bad for our most severe calls. Now, this slide has a lot of numbers on it, so let me orient you to what you're looking at. First, on the left, we have the call count by area, as shown previously for your reference. Second, in each area, we'll show you two numbers. The number on the left is the percentage of calls that the travel time were less than 4 minutes for medical, fire, and extrication calls. The number on the right is the percentage of calls with a travel time of less than 8 minutes. So as you can see, in area 15, only 24% of the calls had travel times less than 4 minutes. In area 13 and 16, less than 40% of medical, fire, and extrication calls had travel times less than 4 minutes. Areas highlighted in red have travel times less than 4 minutes, 40 to 50% of the time. Areas highlighted in orange, 50 to 60% of calls are traveled to in 4 minutes. Yellow, less than 70% of calls travel to in less than 4 minutes. And in area one, where you have the most calls, you also have the highest amount of calls responded to in less than 4 minutes, with just over 70%. So this chart highlights that different areas of the city have different needs. For example, in the west, Mesa has high density of call volumes, which will impact our firefighter well-being. However, in the east, where call volumes may be lower, travel distance increases response times. So understanding the difference, the different needs in the area of the city allows us to plan accordingly and improve our response. Improving our response is a good thing for our community and the ultimate goal of our efforts. Can we answer any questions for you?
So, Mayor and Council, that was a real great presentation. It makes it look really easy, but there's a lot of work that has to go into crunch all those numbers over that point of time. What we want to do is just introduce this to you first, because what we really are seeing is a very, as you can see, that dynamic between east of or west of Gilbert Road and east of Gilbert Road. There's a very distinct difference both in the calls for service, the resources that are deployed, and response times. And so not necessarily that if you're on, you know, response time could be affected maybe because of just the magnitude or the number of calls and the fact that the fire department is running so hard just to keep up with the number of calls and most likely are having to pull units from adjacent units just to meet that, meet those calls. On the other side, there may be a less frequency of calls, but the travel time, or the travel distance, I guess I should say, is so extended that it affects response times. And so what we're wanting to do is kind of lay this out for you, because this really becomes our measure, our ultimate measure, how effective we are and what we, and kind of looking at how we can affect these numbers over time. And I think that's what the fire department will be coming up here in a second to talk about, is our ability to recognize that the way we provide services or the types of services we provide, and we've been discussing that, aren't going to be the same on other different parts of the city. The experts that are in the fire department will be able to look at this and be able to determine, as they look at different ways to approach services, how they can effectively make improvements in response time. But it's not going to be the same. I think it's when we've always kind of used one formula, one national standard or whatever to address calls. And I think what we're suggesting to you today is that we're going to need to be a little more creative and a little more adaptable. And I think the fire chief and her staff will be able to bring and recognize this distinction that we have to deal with. So that's really what we wanted to show you today. Any questions for what you see in front of you right now as far as these exhibits that you've seen? Are they pretty self-explanatory? Makes sense?
Mr. Whitaker.
I've got one question. Are we going to break these out by medical versus fire calls at some point, or is differentiating the two types of calls not important for what you guys are trying to measure?
Mayor and Councilmember Whitaker, we actually have all of the data. We have all of that data that's by the types of calls as well. This is really to just show that the different call, this is the travel time, regardless of what the type of call was, but the travel time for those calls to show that there are differences within the city, that then that becomes our base of how we then approach those. How we approach those would be the type of calls would go into our flexibility of the units that we look at in the future.
That kind of goes to the point, I think, where, and we'll get the fire department here, is that the resources we have available today, majority of the resources, whether it's a fire or a medical call, they're deployed regardless. And so that's, I think, the part that we're looking at is that adaptability. And we've talked about different ways to respond. And I think that's where we're letting the experts kind of tell us what that looks like, recognizing that you saw this, I think, the last time, the increase in the number of medical calls out there versus fire. And the fire department has all those information with them, I think they'll be looking at different ways to address that in the future.
Mr. Freeman.
Thanks, Mr. Brady. These statistics are important because hopefully they'll help us in future deployment of manpower. Right. and it'll drive the delivery service or the ways that we can deliver service to the community. So I appreciate these numbers. Thanks.
Mr. Reddy.
Yeah, the other item, are we also capturing the amount time spent on the call? Is that a factor that we're going to use to also...
Yeah, Mayor and Councilmember Heredia, we have all of that information. Okay. So the Fire Medical Department collects all the information regarding every call, the type of time it takes on the phone before it's dispatched, the actual travel time that we're looking at today, as well as the time on scene, the time when they're released. All that information is available. And as we go through in a methodical manner, obviously to make sure that we can understand the data as it goes through and work with the Fire Medical Department are looking at all of that data to understand. And what this does here, it actually provides a base because this is what's happening today. These are actual calls taken. There's nothing theoretical in any of this data. This is all data that has happened already. So these are actual things or actual cases. And so this actually provides a base. So as the department looks to how they can best address those demands for service, we can always come back as a base and see what was the impact that change had on this particular, you know, response in their travel time.
We'll use this as the comparison to what the fire department, and listen, they're going to have to work on a variety of different approaches. But in the future, then we'll come back and say, okay, here's where we started from. What impact, what changes, how impactful was any proposal that they have, but it'll be based off of these, from these numbers.
And then one other question. This information is just for Mesa. I know we are in first call, right, to respond for other cities.
Automatic aid.
So is there a look at how many calls do we get for automatic aid piece, and how do we integrate, or should we be integrating those numbers?
And Mayor and Councilmember Heredia, that is correct. We do have that information as well. Again, they collect all information. Every time on one of our units or one of our personnel goes out to a call, all information is collected, whether it's on inside Mesa or whether it's across the border in another municipality. For the purposes of this map here, we focus just on Mesa proper. And so these are just the calls within Mesa. These are not all of the calls that our units went to. Our units did go across the border to other calls in addition to the calls that you see here. But really, we're just looking at Mesa proper for this particular review.
Great. Thank you. Appreciate it. I think we'll now...
How we're going to solve this problem.
Yeah. Now to draw the conclusions, perhaps. Welcome, Chief.
Thank you, Mayor Giles, members of the council. Thank you for having us today and giving us the opportunity to talk about what we've done this past year and what we're about to do, what we're going to do in the future over the next few years. Sitting to my right here is Tara Cunha. Tara is the deputy director for the fire department, and she manages the financial division and also resource management. And I would like to acknowledge my senior staff, Chief Mike Dunn, Chief Corey Hayes, Chief James Johnson, and Chief Forrest Smith. All of them have done a great job in managing their areas and continue to help moving the fire department forward. So I appreciate my staff very, very much for what they do within the department. Before I start, I would like to just mention how proud I am of the members that we have in the fire department. They do a great job each and every day, and they truly, truly really care about the community. At times, their job is hazardous and dangerous, but they continue to operate safely each and every day and provide quality care to our members. I think that's so important as we move forward because firefighter wellness, as busy as we are, firefighter wellness is going to be a critical component in our decisions as we move forward. It's an honor for me to lead such a group of professionals, and whether they're the responders, the support staff out there, or the volunteers, all of them have a goal of providing the utmost professional service to our community, and I think we do a really good job at that. Okay, we'll go ahead and start our presentation. To start with our mission statement, this year we did a new strategic plan, a three-year strategic plan, and we created a new mission statement. And our mission statement is to serve with care, compassion, accountability, respect, and excellence. And I think this is something that we want to do on each and every call and everything that we do. Our members should know this. If you ask them, if you ask any firefighter, they should know when you ask them. And if they don't, hopefully they know it the next time you ask them. They'll know it the second time you ask them. It's easy enough to remember, and it's important enough that we live it. So three measures, and the first one's a demand, a top demand that we have, and that's call volume, which really translates to citizens needing help. Every time we get a 911 call, it translates to citizens needing help. And two performance measures are our response times and our dispatch times. These are things that we track regularly to monitor where we are. Our top three challenges that we have: call volume, response times, and response types, and training. Training is really, really important for the safety of our members, and that's something that we have to make sure we stay on top of, continue working on. So as you already heard from Shalay, Mark, and Candace, we've had our data. So this is our data for 2017. We ran about 64,000 incidents last year in Mesa. With this information, and Councilman Whitaker, to address your question before, the fire calls were just under 5,600, and the medical calls were about 56,000 in this incident. First quarter of this year is already just under 900 calls more than we were last year in first quarter. So we're on track to be about 5% more in call volume this coming year than we were last year. Next is response times. Our response times this year average, this is just an average, and that's 6 minutes and 28 seconds. If you notice from the year before, the response times went down, and we attribute that to a couple of things. In a couple slides, I will tell you about some units we had in place that helped, we put in service to help with this call volume, to help with the response time reduction. But also training had a big deal to do with that. In the past, for training, the last few years, what we've done with training was we would take 4 to 5 units out of service every day, and they'd go to 3 to 4 times a week for about 4 hours at a time. That really impacted the system where units were spread thin. So this past year, what Chief Hayes and her work group did was they consolidated every dollar they had to allow these units to stay in service. We paid overtime to keep them in service and send the training crews to training at the time. Training didn't get interrupted. They were able to train for 4 hours, and all the crews, all the units stayed in service. This was a really benefit to our members for training, and also helped reduce response times as well.
Excuse me, Mary.
Sure.
Mr. Thompson.
Chief, I noticed the fine print. It says 911 call handling time not included. So from the time the call in and call, from the time the 911 call comes in to the time the unit arrives on scene, what is that average length?
So the only thing that's missing is the 911 call. Everything else is in here. So when our dispatcher gets the call from 911, and that information we need to get from PD. So however much time PD has the call before they transfer it, it could be 30 seconds, it could be a minute, we're still gathering that data, because really we want to put all that in this, in our compilation of the call time.
Okay.
So basically it does include our dispatch time, our turnout time, and our wheels turning time till we get on scene.
Okay.
And it comes to 6 minutes and 28 seconds. In addition to that, you will start seeing NFPA standard, and also accreditation wants us to track response times by the 90th percentile. That means what is your time that you do 90% of the time or faster? And in Mesa, we do 8 minutes and 30 seconds, 90% of the time or faster. And so in the future, you will see both of these numbers as we start transitioning into the 90th percentile.
Sorry, one more question.
Sure.
Do you know the response times required for insurance purposes? Because I know the further away you live from a station and the longer your response time, the higher your premiums are. Do you happen to know that?
I don't know if there's a specific response time. You're talking about for ISO ratings. Mm-hmm. So they rate your department by several different things. Response times is one of them, and the number of stations you have in your city. And I know Mesa right now is a 3. About 5 years ago, we did our RSO rating, and we used to be a 2, and we went down to a 3 based on we didn't have enough fire stations and fire engines in our community. So Mesa is a 3 right now based on the ISO rating.
Okay.
So they can... they include several things in that ISO rating.
Chief.
Sure.
Mr. Luna.
Chief, I had a question in terms of your response time. Are on the west side of town, are your response times shorter than they would be on the east side? I mean, is that a given because of the distance and you have less stations on the east side?
Absolutely. And, you know, an average is just an average because you're right on the west side. Our times are much quicker on the east side, southeast Mesa, northeast Mesa. Those are much more extended times to get there. So average, we come up at 628, but you're correct, Vice Mayor, is that the east Mesa, the times are they're more extended than on the west Mesa where we're more condensed.
So a solution might be having more stations.
That may help the response times in east Mesa.
I got a question. I'm looking at the previous slide that was just presented to us, the heat map, and that's, am I misinterpreting the heat map?
Which one?
From the previous
presentation.
Slide 5 shows that the longest times are in areas 1 and 2, which are both in West Mesa.
So, yeah.
So 1, 2, 3, so that's what
remember the point I made is that's what's interesting about this analysis is that on one side, the extended response times may come not because of the distance. It has to do with the volume, call volume is so high that you probably, Chief, are pulling units from different areas. So
that's
I guess
correct.
In effect, it's just that there's so much happening in that area that they can't respond to all the calls coming from their specific, and you see those kind of colored shapes. What's happening is a lot of those units at a time will often have to pull from other units from other distances to come in. Now, the chief did something really good this past year where before it could have been affected by training, too, where you're pulling units out to get training. But if you go on the east side of Gilbert Road, yeah, that's probably a distance issue, right? We see frequency of calls drops for some of these, but we still see extended response times. Well, we're going to assume that's probably related to distance. And that's just, you know, especially down in, what is that, 15 and 19, then you got to go around an airport, you know. So I think the point is there isn't a simple solution for either side. And I think the chief will talk about this.
Sure.
We need more fire stations, but that's not the only solution because just putting more stations in, it may not be that they may solve that's not going to solve all your issues. You may need more adaptable units, right? And she's been very good at that, at trying to figure out kind of the variety of units. But fire stations certainly could be part of the answer, just because of growing population, obviously.
Sure.
But it's the nature of the calls and the density of calls, too, has to be taken into consideration.
Mayor and Councilmember Whitaker, you were asking about, I think you asked about station 1 in there.
Yeah.
That actually has the fastest response time.
So
when you're looking at left-hand side, that bar is the number of calls. So that area has the largest number of calls per year. So on the side, you're looking at number of calls, call volume. Okay. And then in the little boxes is the percent of time they get there within 4 minutes. This is just the travel time portion. So 70.3% of the time, those calls are within 4 minutes. That means that's actually the fastest response time is in area 1.
Okay. I was misinterpreting the map. I didn't realize there's two separate data sets, one that showed the number of calls and then one that showed the response time. So, like, area 1, for instance, is in the 93rd percentile for fastest response times, even though they get the most calls.
93%
are within 8 minutes.
Within
8 minutes.
Yeah,
there's two numbers. So the one that have the square around it is within 4 minutes, and the one that does not have the box around it is within 8 minutes.
There's still 6.9% that fall outside of the
response. Sure. Okay.
Does that make sense? So we really, in this one, we're trying to, and we know it's a lot of information in one area, but one of the things that kind of came up all the time was the weighting of it. So when one particular area is in the 50 percentile versus a 42%, you know, percent of the time, not say percentile, percent of the time, we also want to look at the call volume that's out there. So how many calls are within 4 minutes and how many calls are outside of the 4 minutes. So that's why we wanted to give you the information on both call volumes and the response time all kind of in one place. And I do apologize. It does make it a little complex in one slide.
It's a lot of information.
But once you really kind of understand the kind of the call volume and the percentages, then you can kind of see where it might make sense to take a look at it that way.
So do these numbers correspond to the station numbers as well? Station 1, station 2, station?
Yes. Yes, they are.
So we all need to go buy the guys at station 1 a beer, don't we?
They'd probably enjoy that, yeah.
6,000 calls last year, and
in
they responded
area.
within 4 minutes and 70% of the time. And that's really amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, that's busy.
Double unit, but it's a well-placed unit.
Yeah.
There's two units.
Right, but it's well-placed because it's responding well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And Mayor, Councilmember Whitaker as well. Mr. Brady was right, though, even though the times are faster there, when they're that busy, they are drawing units from other places as well to kind of infill. So I was referring to as infilling some of those areas with the high call volume that you have.
Yeah, I just misunderstood what the numbers said.
All right, thank you. Which one are we on to here? Okay. All right, so that was 64,000 calls in first quarter of this year. Next one. Response times. Any other questions on the response times?
If I could, yes. I have one other question on the response time. When we talk about there's a goal to have 90% of our calls under this 8-minute standard, how do we compare to the rest of the country as far as are we meeting the same response times, or what does that comparison look like?
Mayor, Councilmember Whitaker, you bring up a great question because the 90th percentile is something very new. Mesa's been accredited. We're going on 20 years that we've been accredited. And per accreditation, this is how they want us to track the standard. But almost every department in the Valley and most departments in the country are tracking averages. Averages are nice, but they don't really give you the full picture, because if we took our averages and you could see what East Mesa looks like versus West Mesa on response times, there are two different dynamics going on. So 90th percentile, you don't see it everywhere. So we're trying to evaluate that to see what the standard is. Right now, if we look at the accreditation handbook, they give you a certain amount of time for each thing, and they come up, it comes to about 6 minutes and 4 seconds is what this, it's not the gold standard, but it's a standard that accreditation says is where they're starting with, because not everybody tracks their data this way. So we have nothing to compare it to here in the Valley because no one else does. Surprise is just starting to do this as well.
Okay.
Investments in the future of sustainability. Like I mentioned earlier, our call volume each year has been going up 2 to 5%, and it looks like we're going to see that for this coming year if we stay on track to where we are. Establishing a training holdover model that I explained earlier, this allows our units to stay in service and keep those units available to run calls in the city. And then the second two bullets here, the social services and the education, these are both prevention models that we have in place to help reduce 911 calls as well. The social services group goes out and they help these high utilizers when they call 911 often, whether they're elderly couple that needs to go live in assisted living. We work with them. Our social services group works with them to get them the resources they need so they don't use 911 that often. And also our education, the same thing with our education group. They look at the data that we have on, for example, falls. They go into the retirement communities where there's a high volume of fall calls, and they will go in and give education on this, so we have reduced the number of falls that happen in these communities. Or they'll take the high utilizers that are falling often. They'll go there and go into the home. They install fall bars. They do a full assessment of the home, take out rugs, things like that, to help mitigate these type of calls from happening. A fall for an elderly can be a fatal incident. So these type of programs are prevention, and these are, we have partnerships with the businesses and all to help to keep these programs going with the supplies as well.
Excuse me, Mary. Mr. Sure. Bona.
Mary, are you working with the number of assisted living facilities that are propagating throughout the community?
Absolutely. Vice Mayor Luna, yes, we know there's several assisted living communities that are being built, especially in your district, seems to be having quite a few of them. But we know that we, on our top 20 addresses, 19 of those 20 addresses are to a skilled nursing home, assisted living, things like that. So that's something we have to be prepared for as well, an increase in call volume when we see these buildings being built. Thank you.
Well, I have I know Mr. Glover has a question too, but I had the same question about the assisted living facilities, because I think a year ago during this meeting, it was pointed out that I think 19 of our top 20 calls for service are assisted living facilities, and there are various levels of staffing and professionalism associated with the different assisted living facilities in town. Some are very high quality, very highly staffed. Others, not so much. And they seem to call on us when someone falls out of bed rather than having the ability to respond to some of those things themselves. So we've talked out, we've suggested what ought we to do about that. You know, should we explore some sort of a city licensing requirement or something just to acknowledge the fact that that these folks are frequent flyers and that they're putting additional and unusual amount of financial stress on our system?
Sure, Mayor Giles, members of the council. That is correct. We have trying to address this issue right now. Our EMS staff is going out and doing some education to these facilities, talking about when to and not to call 911, what are things they can do on their end to help reduce the number of times 911 is contacted. Absolutely, we always tell them, when you need to call 911, absolutely. Sometimes if someone falls out of bed and they're not hurt and they just want to get back in bed, some of these facilities have policies where they don't touch them until 911 gets there. So our staff is working with these facilities to educate them on when and when not to call 911 in those type of incidents. When we were here last year, we gave some options of ways to generate revenue to help pay for some of those costs. One of them was to bill for nursing home calls. That's so far we've gotten a few off the list of things that we were going to bill for that we talked about earlier. Nursing homes, in order to do some of that billing, there might be some legislation. There's certain bed tax fees, things like that that we all talked about. We're still working with OMB on this option that we brought forward last year. But in the meantime, what we thought we would start with was education. We did education about maybe 4 years ago, and we find that when we educate at these facilities about this, the call volume drops, and then it goes back up again. A lot of times there's a frequent turnover on many of these facilities, and so we have to go back and educate more than once just to keep it fresh in everyone's mind. So we thought we'd start with education again because we saw results quickly after we went there and educated on this. The call volume would drop, and as it comes back up again because they have new employees, we'll go back out and educate again.
Are there other cities across the nation that do have this kind of a model where you have an industry that requires an excessive amount of calls for service, that there's some sort of a model to recover the costs associated with that?
None that we are aware of. Yeah. And I know this is a problem across the nation with assisted living and nursing homes and the fire departments responding on these calls. This is a common problem here in the Valley as well that we face. But none that we're aware of, Mayor.
I know Mr. Wesley will tell you there's no shortage of pending zoning cases as well for assisted living. That I think that there's a lot, and there's people that want to build a lot more. So I don't see this as a situation that's getting anything but more critical. Mr. Glover.
Thank you, Mayor. Chief, can you comment on the future of the TRV program in your department?
Sure. So the TRV program is now known as our LA program. And it's a two-person unit with a medic and an EMT. And we are currently piloting with our LA program. And the reason they changed the name is because they wanted something regionally that everyone can call it in the region. When they hear it on the radio, they know what that unit is. So it's a paramedic and an EMT. We are currently piloting those programs today on the type of calls that they can respond on and manage with two people. We're working with the Office of OMB, and we're putting in different models to use these units. We have three of them in service today. And to see what types of calls, or to try to match the right call for this resource that we have. And we'll continue to do that because they do have a good purpose in our community for infill and where we have the high call volumes of these low acuity type calls, and that's what they're designed to do.
The Chief, you should mention you used that prior analysis that we showed you.
The staff, the fire department's using that analysis we showed before about where call volume is most impacting your operations. And so that's where you're placing, correct? You go ahead and you place those LA units and pilot them in those areas. And then the data scientists can track and see what impact it's had on response times in there. And that feedback goes back to the chief. She can continue the program, modify it, try it in different areas. Is that?
That's exactly right. Mr. Brady's correct. We've been piloting these programs just so we could come up with what model works. So we've been working with our data scientists, and I love that name. That sounds... we're modeling these units in different places, the high call volume areas, to see how we can reduce calls on these four-person engine companies if they can manage these low-level type calls. So we're going to continue modeling and seeing which model is going to fit the needs the best and which stations they need to be at as well.
Are we still working with Mountain Vista and them providing a nurse practitioner, and do we still have the mental health unit?
I think that's my very next slide, Councilmember Glover, or two slides away. But yeah, I'll get to that in two slides we have. Thank you. The community involvement, There's three things that we've been doing just recently in the last few years. Aspire Academy. This is a partnership with the Girl Scouts, and it's for police and fire. And we have, it's a three-day academy where we introduce these young girls to the careers of police and fire. They're not, you know, they're not, a lot of these girls don't even know it's an option for them to do these kind of careers. So this is one way we introduce them to our careers. And it's been a great program, and we've done it for the third year in a row now. A great response on that. Our cadet program, they'll be graduating Thursday night. We have 83 cadets. This is a regional program with Queen Creek, Gilbert, Mesa, and Apache Junction. And these kids, these young kids, these high school kids between 13 and 18 years old, they learn about our jobs. These young men and young women, they learn about our jobs, and they practice every once a month on Wednesday and Saturday, and it's a nine-month program. Very, very successful program. And then our Citizens Academy. The first year that we've done the Citizens Academy, it just finished 2 weeks ago. I really believe this was a great success. We had citizens throughout the community that wanted to be involved in the Citizens Academy. We had a waiting list of about 20 people. We allowed 25 people. We really take them into the departments. We show them everything we do, the different divisions, ask the questions that they have, so we have transparency on whatever questions they have. This was a huge success, and we just started our second one here in last week. Next, we have, these are the efficient models that we talked about that helped us reduce response times. And this was our LA. This year we had three LAs that we put in service. And the Office of OMB is helping us. We keep them constant staffed. They were in service, some were in service for, one was in service for 6 months. The other ones were for 3 to 4 months. And these were peak hour units only. And they ran just under 1,800 calls that they respond to on the low acuity calls. And then engine 223, we had a station that had to be remodeled. It had a water pipe burst underneath. And it was a major production for station 204. Because we had to move that engine south to 708 for 5 months while the construction was being done, we added a second unit at station 3, and you saw how busy station 3 was. By adding that unit ran 2,000 calls in a 5 month period to help the call volume in that area just while this construction was being done. We knew pulling that one unit a mile further south was going to cause a big problem in this area, and surely that the number of calls they ran really indicated they needed to be there. So both of those helped us to reduce response times last year as well. 2018, we're going to be evaluating the demand types that they talked about on our data. We're going to see which unit works best in what area as we move forward. And then our transportation pilot program. That's the two units we're going to put in service, two ambulances we're going to put in service to run low acuity calls. They're going to be peak hours, and it starts May 7th.
Mr. Luna.
Chief. How long are you going to run that pilot for the transportation?
That's going to be a one-year pilot program. Okay. We'll see how efficient it is and how effective it is. They're going to be stationed right downtown in downtown Mesa at our old fire station, Station 201, where admin is, and just because that's where the core of a lot of these type of low acuity calls are. And so we will run that pilot for a year, and then we'll come back to city management and to council and give you the results of that. Okay. So our future staffing need... I'm sorry...
We'll talk about it.
Future staffing needs. So based on the pilots that we're doing, staffing models, we're going to be determined as we continue these pilot programs, but we're going to need staffing models to address the response times, the span of control, and the call volume as we move forward. We know the call volume is only going to increase. So we're going to need additional staffing for those purposes. Additional fire stations, two new fire stations, staffing for that. And then some additional support staff in terms of span of control that we see out there in the field with our battalion chiefs. We have three battalions right now, and they're getting extremely busy as the call volume increases, and their direct reports, the number of direct reports they have increased as well. And then professional support staff. There's a few areas in our department that really need support and tech services, and all these areas that are really building, they need some support behind the scenes to keep these things moving forward.
Excuse me, Mary.
Sure.
Can you quantify that for us a little bit? Because I know you said two new fire stations, staffing for two new fire stations. Is that, I thought I heard maybe the number 13 firefighters for a new fire station. Is
correct.
That a rough number?
That's correct. So 13 per station is what we need. And when we look at the staffing models that we've modeled, we're looking at between 60 and 70 firefighters to staff all these stations, to staff infill units. This is a projection moving forward that we're anticipating. So somewhere in the ballpark of 60 to 70, depending on what model we come across that will fit the needs in West Mesa and the staffing models of the two fire stations.
So I get and I appreciate the fact that you're in the middle of this right now and that you're working with our data scientists, to use the fun word. And I think the last time we did talk briefly about fire's budget, the number that sticks is that we're allocating about $1.5 million going forward for the whatever the new model is that we're going to have for the low acuity vehicles, correct?
Right, correct.
So we need about 60 to 70 additional personnel.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. That didn't include the $1.5 million. That's total. But if we took off the $1.5 million, that would take out about
What did you say about
$10 million.
$10 million. If you want to quantify it in dollars, Mayor.
Okay.
That's kind of where our number came to about 10 million.
The next 5 years?
Five to seven years.
Yes, between.
So 60 to 70 people, $10 million-ish dollars.
Correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Sure.
A year.
Of new money.
Yeah.
New money,
year.
Right.
To support that, I mean, that's probably a modest number.
Sure.
Because there's
the salaries
obviously
and benefits.
Comes
and
with that is the equipment, the apparatus, yeah. Even fires. Well, you're going to talk about the hero. Go ahead, keep going.
Okay. And then, as Mr. Brady just alluded to, all the stuff that comes with that, and this is the capital improvement projects that come with that. So apparatus, this is to maintain our current apparatus when it gets old. We have an amazing fleet that they do a very good job of trying to get as much out of our units as we can. So that, new fire stations, station rebuild, station 205 is the next up. That's at Greenfield, just south of Broadway. And then future land acquisitions. And all of this comes to about $60 million for the bond projects that are here.
Okay, so the two new stations and to equip the two new stations and to acquire the land and the apparatus, you say
so
about a $60 million.
Mayor, one of those new stations we're assuming is Eastmark.
Correct. One of them are
Eastmark.
So
we don't need the full, we already have land, we have
correct.
Some contributions. What are gavels? Forget the numbers.
5.5 is what they gave us.
5.5 million is what's remaining to be able to fund the capital side.
Correct.
Of the fire station at Eastmark, and then we would have a second one.
Correct.
That we've identified here. And what's interesting, Mayor, is there's a lot of places we can put fire stations, and we try to look at from the data to drive it. What's interesting is there's a lot of places, but certainly we're seeing growth in northeast Mesa. There is a thought, we are considering the possibility, because police department was here last week. They talked about the need for a new substation. They talked about that also being in Northeast Mesa. So we are having some thoughts about, is there a location that meets the needs of both fire and police where possibly, if it makes sense, you could overlap and have a combined police and fire, police substation and fire. Now, this is a possibility. We don't know if that's going to happen. There's been a lot of ideas, but it's something worth looking at, because then we could the land purchase would have to be sufficient, but there's a lot of other logistics and support that maybe could be combined there too. So
Mr. Luna.
Thank you, Mayor. So are we looking at something similar to what we have at the Superstition Station, which is both police and fire? Is that correct?
Yes, Mayor, Vice Mayor Luna, exactly.
And as far as you know, that's worked fine.
Sure, and Chief Batista alluded that their location isn't as critical because the officers go about, and our station location is more critical for that. So that's a great possibility that we can surely have a joint station like that police fire station like we do in at Ellsworth and Baseline.
Mr. Whitaker.
Question, can you just take a heat map of the time that it took to get to each call and build the station right in the middle of the location that shows the longest response time? Like to just use the data to exactly pinpoint where you want to put your next location?
Mayor, Councilmember Whitaker, that's exactly what we're doing. Based on the data that we're getting, they're showing us the absolute best location for any future fire station. And to say, all the 20 fire stations that we have, when he puts that heat map on, he said we're pretty close to where it would actually have shown him putting them. And, you know, this is years of someone well before us that were planned out these land places. But yes, that's what he's doing with the data. That's how we're determining where our next station should go.
Great, thank you.
Mm-hmm. On the other hand, we are looking at seeing maybe if we can tweak the one in Eastmark. So it's it just depends. So we do run them into the model where these locations are. We put them into the model and then run the model and see the placement of a fire station and what effect it would have on the response times in that area.
Okay, and collaborative efforts. Councilmember Glover, the grant, that's the first slide, the first bullet on here is the grant did come to an end. We were able to do an extension, 6 months. They gave us an extension, but we were not able to secure funding from insurance companies to keep the programs going. But we are continuing to work with them because Mountain Vista is was a great partner, willing to still partner with us, as well as CPR, Crisis Preparation and Recovery, both of those partnerships they're willing to do. So we're still working with Access and Mercy Maricopa in order to secure funding from insurance, because we know that this benefits the patient, but also insurance saves a lot of money on these programs. And the other partnerships are sponsorship with our public-private sponsorship. This is going very, very well in terms of the safety messages on our trucks. And then also a partnership with NAU and ASU for our social services and our education programs. So we'll continue with these partnerships as we move forward.
Mary, is this slide from one of your junior cadet programs?
It's either Aspire or Junior Cadets. I'm trying to think.
Congratulations. That's a great service that you're providing there.
Help the children out.
Yeah, right.
I apologize. That was the only picture we had that we can use on that.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. And Tara's going to go over the next two slides.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Chief.
Why not just do it over?
So this is our 5 years of financial history. As you can see, every year it goes up a little bit, and that's based on merit increases and the public safety retirement system mostly. And then a little bit more detail on this one. In the department support, that's where we've gotten our budget enhancement requests for next year that were given to us, put into our budget by OMB. And they include all of our grants that we applied for, a $400,000 grant match for one particular grant, our small vehicle replacement, and some of the life cycle replacement stuff.
And Tara, we should mention that we funded the training too this year, right? So that
not in here though.
Is that?
That was after this was already.
But we are funding. So Mayor the Chief brought up this idea that we were having to pull people, we have to pull units off to go get them trained, and then we had to use overtime. We didn't have enough funding to continue that. So,
that's right.
But in order to keep the units
in service, right.
We added, what was the number?
360.
360,000. We thought that was a good trade-off to having those units available. So that's we've done that. And
yes.
We're adding that. It's not in this number
right,
here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We'll be adding that into the proposed budget.
Correct.
And as a result, you saw the decrease in response times.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
From when we did it this past year. And so Mr. Brady is correct. He's giving us the money for that to continue that, which we're very pleased with. Members are very happy about.
And then with the incident response on the top one, that's mostly what I talked about on the last one with the retirement and the merits increases.
Hey,
thank you. Council questions for these folks? Mr. Thompson.
So on this budget at a glimpse, I look at you're wanting to do more community involvement, more education, and more of the programs, but you're reducing your funding by $3 million. And then when I look at the big picture, what your incident response is going up by about as much as your community involvement's going down, but your departmental support is about a $3.3 million increase, right? Why is your departmental support, why is that number going up when over the years it looks like it's been decreasing, but suddenly 18-19? I mean, your actuals in 16-17 were 14.2, and compared to 2 years later, now it's at 18 million. Why is there such a drastic increase in your departmental support and then a reduction in the community involvement area?
Councilmember Thompson and Mayor, sorry, I should have explained on the community involvement, we had the CMS grant there, so that it was kind of separated out from our operations. So that 18-19 is because it's gone away.
Okay.
So that's the drop there.
And then, what was the second part?
Departmental support.
Why is department support up?
That's where all of our bars are. So our budget adjustment requests. So there's some training, resiliency training. The new staffing model's above. Let's see.
Oh,
and there's the match for the heart rate monitors and the.
Why don't you explain that a little bit? Explain, because that's really important. That was one of your top priorities. Talk
sure.
about that a little.
The heart rate monitors. So we applied for a grant for the heart rate monitors. It was a regional grant, and they were going to give us. It was going to take it cost $400,000 for the city to match the grant match. We just found out that we did not get the grant, so we're still looking for other grants to try and get that as well, to get another grant for monitors.
And that's $2.5 million.
That's $2.5 million.
$2.5 million.
And so there, and then the other $2 million is just.
Well, there was the small vehicle replacement, and that's part of our life cycle. So, like, not the apparatus, but the smaller vehicles that we use. That was almost $500,000. And then dispatch life cycle was $200,000, and resource life cycle was $280,000.
So, Tara, maybe explain what would be included in a life cycle for those two areas. Talk about the equipment. What kind of equipment would that include?
So dispatch, they had radio consoles and phone call consoles, which are like the actual equipment that they work on. It's all attached and has all the wires and everything through it, so those are pretty expensive.
So we put them on a cycle when we anticipate they will become obsolete or they need to be replaced. And so you've included, that's been included in these numbers here.
Correct.
The apparatus are funded out of the capital improvement program.
Right, that's it.
Yeah.
That's why you see those mentioned in the earlier slide under CIP. Yeah. So if we move forward with the next bond package, I believe the apparatus number is like $24.5 to $25 million
correct.
For the next group.
That's correct.
Of apparatus. Because we hold on to those for, we don't fund them, we don't fund them with 20-year bonds. They usually last, 15?
10 years front line, and then we still use them for another 5 to 7 years for reserve, yes.
Yeah, so we try to get shorter-term bonds, but they're usually in the CIP package.
Thank you. Mr. Freeman.
Mayor, you brought up the fact about nursing homes and cost recovery with them, and I think in our public safety committee meeting, did we talk about coming up with a model of cost recovery and implementation of that? And I know you're doing the education side of it, but I personally don't feel that's enough. I think that we should move forward. I don't know how the group feels, but some type of cost recovery with our nursing homes, because I think you can implement both of them and see which one plays out at the end of the day.
Okay. Chair.
Councilmember Freeman and Mayor, we put together a model for that, but we worked with OMB and we agreed to do the education and measure it a few times before we implemented anything. So there was a video that they just produced that has just gone out. I'm not sure how many facilities they've gone to, but that was the first step. And they're giving them initial training and then leaving them a copy of the video. So if they have turnover, they can replay it for others. But we didn't
want to. Part of me tells me that's not going to work. Been there and done that. So I just think that you should put both into play and work with that.
Okay.
That's my opinion, because whether you crews go there to provide a service, which is very important, but we should also get some value out of that, because we're assisting them, and they're the paying customer. And it comes down to it that maybe we can't do it for free every time.
Sure. Mayor, Councilmember Freeman, we will do that. We'll look into work with OMB and start looking at the next steps with that process of cost recovery.
We talked about non-finance.
Let's go with Mr. Thompson, then Mr. Heredia.
Scott, I'm Butler. I hope I'm not going to try to throw you under the fire truck. But can you think of any can you think of any legislation or any reason why we couldn't implement a charge for a cost recovery on the assisted living homes?
Mayor, Councilmember Thompson, I'm not sure if there's any state statutory language that would preclude something like that. I'll be glad to work with the attorney's office and get back to you with an answer on that. I'm not sure. Obviously, there's been a lot of sensitivity over hospital assessments and other issues at the legislature over the last several years, but I'm not sure in a scheme as you're proposing whether there's any limitations that we have at that point.
Thank you. Mr. Luna. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
You want to go?
Yeah, just I'm older. Sure. Oldest, yeah.
You'll forget.
That's right.
Yeah, that's been one of my concerns because we are seeing the proliferation of these assisted living in District 5, and I'm concerned that they're going to call you every time somebody falls. And we have to come up and develop some mechanism that we charge them for it, because what anecdotally I'm hearing is that staff isn't trained, and then they'll just call 911. Well, why should they injure their backs when they can have a firefighter do it? And that's just not right. So we need to figure out that we need to figure out a plan how we do that. So
okay,
thank you. Sorry, Ms. Edley.
No worries. On the cost recovery, as far as billing wise, any headway on the LA units as far as billings for some of those services? That I think in a prior presentation you mentioned that you tried working with Axis and private insurance companies. Any update on that, where we're at?
Sure. Mayor, Councilmember Heredia. So with the LA units, we're not billing for the LAs, but we were billing with the CM units. That's where we provided a different service. So the CMs, we were billing. Now that that program's ended, we're not billing anymore. The LAs, in order to bill for the LAs, they have what was called a treat and refer program that the state put forward. And that was designed so fire engines, when they go to a home, if it's a call that they treated and left on scene, that you can bill for that service. And it was a $200 bill, and whatever the insurance gave you, $80 or, you know, in terms of the cost reimbursement. But the thing with that program is we have to fill out a complete application. You have to train all your members. It had, I think it was like 40 hours of training. And then every single one of those calls, there had to be a follow-up. And so in order for us to do that, as busy as we are, we would have to hire somebody to do that follow-up. And it would just, I think for us, it would be almost a break even. And so the CM units, we were able to bill for those because we have a CON. But the LA program to do that treat and refer program, that would take a lot more training. We would have to pay for that training in addition to following up on every one of those calls that you leave in the home.
So are we still able to bill on the CM units then?
We don't have any CMs right now, CMs, but we will bill for the when we have the ambulance pilot in place, we will bill for that.
The transportation
model.
That's the one she's working on right now.
Right.
The insurance companies on.
That's correct. So for the transportation model, absolutely, because we have a CON with the state of Arizona, we can bill for transportation. So when we do that pilot program, we will be billing for those calls.
Thank you, Council. Any additional questions? Mr. Whitaker.
One question. What percentage of your calls are related to the care homes that we're referencing?
So the exact number, Mayor, Councilmember Whitaker, so we know out of the top 20 addresses that we respond to, 19 of them are assisted living and nursing homes. And we go between some of them 200 and 300 times down to, you know, 60, 70 times. So that exact number, I don't have that exact number.
Yeah, I mean, like the total calls that we had last year, I think your chart showed like 64,000.
Yeah, we can surely get that.
I'm trying to figure out, is like statistically insignificant, or are you talking like a very large percentage of those 64,000 calls?
Oh. Having to go back to those same locations? And we can figure out what the actual volume is.
We can surely get the exact number, but out of 19 times 200 calls, just average, because some of them would go 300 times, and then some of them go 200 times. So is that 3,800 calls, about that?
Out of the 64?
No, 19 addresses. 19 different, out of the top 20 addresses we respond to, 19 of those top 20, we go sometimes 200 times to each of these facilities a year, 200 and 300 times a year to each of these 19 addresses.
So 19 times 200.
Times 200, yeah.
So 4,000.
So that's every couple 3,800. Of days you're going back.
But, yeah, it's not.
Or less.
Out of 60-some thousand calls, but.
Yeah, I'm just trying to
understand. About 4,000.
Well, now you're only counting the 19 highest, not
all
of the assisted living
facilities.
Correct. So we'd have to go tell it. She's just giving you
the 19 highest.
The top ones.
Numbers.
But if we took all assisted living facilities throughout the city, I mean, that's going to be more than 19. There's going to be.
Yeah, there'll be more.
I don't know what that number is. Yeah. So we can see if, I don't know if that, is that coded that way?
Sure.
Assisted living?
We can absolutely do that. Yeah.
I guess more specifically, what I'm trying to figure out is how many of the calls are reoccurring versus original calls. So I know that when we sat down last week, one of the things that you'd indicated was that multiple people will call 911 multiple occasions on the same day just to get transport to a hospital or something to that effect. So I'm just more wondering, out of the 64,000 calls, how many of those
are high utilized?
Are just a second call. How many addresses were called twice out of those 64,000 versus all of those being original 64,000 calls. But I know you don't have that data, but if you guys can provide that to me later, that would be
absolutely
great.
We'll get that for you, sure.
So the consensus I'm hearing is we'd like to have a subcommittee meeting to hear some ideas from staff on how we address the assisted living phenomenon that we have and the high calls for service.
Okay.
Is that a fair thing to say, Council? Thank you. Other questions for our fire department? Mr. Thompson.
Chief, I'd just like to say thank you to you and your assistant chiefs and all your men and women in fire. You do a great job. You always have. I know when I've needed you, you were there. When my father needed you guys, you were there. So thank you for everything that you do for our citizens on every single day of the year.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Luna.
Chief, thank you so much. I know that you sit on the board of the Mesa Hispanic Association, Mesa Association of Hispanic Citizens, and you do that. You've been doing that for years, and I appreciate you connecting with the Latino community, and you've always been there for Latino Town Hall.
Yes.
And so I appreciate that, connecting with the Latino community. Make sure that they're engaged. Make sure that you're communicating any safety needs that we have in our community. So please continue doing that, and I just want to let you know that we truly appreciate that.
Thank you. I enjoy it very much. Thank you, Vice Mayor Luna.
I made a mistake earlier because I singled one station out for praise, Station 1, and I immediately heard from Mr. Freeman. Yes, that's very impressive, but Station 3 has nearly also a very high call volume, and they only
Correct.
Have one crew as opposed to two. So I think we need to make a beer run for two stations.
Or Mayor, ice cream will work too. Okay. Ice cream will work too.
All right. All right.
Yeah, you don't want to drink your beer.
Yeah, we don't want to be in the pit.
Whatever.
All right.
Okay, well, so not to say that everyone in the department, as has been said, we're very proud of our fire department. We know you're a national leader, and we really appreciate it. We're very proud of you. So thank you very much. I do have some questions, but I think they're more geared towards Mr. Brady, because last Thursday we had a similar presentation from our great police department. My takeaway from that, in addition to the very depressing number that we heard in terms of number of suicide calls each year, was the number 72 additional police officers. Today, Chief Camelli used the number between 60 to 70 new firefighters over the course, of the next 5 years or so. I think, did I say that correctly?
Yes.
Yeah, permanently.
She can't be far behind Plea D. I mean, she wouldn't want to beat her by that much. So,
so the rough estimate I heard is that's about $10 million a year. I would estimate the police are going to be more than that, maybe $15 million a year. So, Mr. Brady, we need to find $25 million a year in additional revenue to respond to our public safety needs tied to the growth of our community. Given the current model that we have, is that possible?
New revenues, no. Not with our current, not with just growth in the base, no.
That being the case, I know we're going to continue in this process for the next couple of weeks, doing budget hearings and hearing more about the other needs of the community. But I think sometime around the 26th is my understanding as to when we're going to wrap up those budget presentations.
Well, I think that's the next, it's not wrapping up, but we'll be making budget presentations again on the 26th, Mayor. We'll be getting close. I don't think we'll be wrapping up yet by the 26th.
Well, maybe it's not. Maybe it's
I think that's when you're. I think it's when you're here next.
That's when I'm back. if it's not the 26th, that perhaps the meeting after that. I think I would ask for you to make some suggestions as to what are some models that we could look at in order to respond to the revenue.
Mayor and City Council, we've talked about this during the strategic planning process. You gave us direction to start looking at. A possibility of considering a public safety sales tax. So what we would like to do is on the 26th, we will bring to you, unless I hear otherwise, about a quarter cent sales tax, how much we would forecast that to be consistent with the growth and what we see our current sales tax looks like. We can kind of project out for you what a quarter cent sales tax looks like. And then we can probably... Usually it's about a 60-40 split between police and fire. We can kind of then bring to you kind of what that would mean as far as the total number of positions and equipment that could fund for an extended period of time. So we can
if that's something you would be interested in seeing, we can bring that to you on the 26th.
Okay.
Be okay?
Yeah.
We'll try to get it out to you as soon as possible, but we could discuss it on the 26th.
Yes, thank you. I see some heads nodding.
Okay.
And then also, obviously, we discussed public safety capital today, and you know, the additional fire stations and whatnot. And I know it's been a while since we've had a public safety bond, and so I think we're anticipating further discussion on that. Is that
right? Yes. Thank you, Mayor. I think what we'll do maybe for this Thursday is provide to council kind of an impact of what it looks like for both public safety, parks, streets, and other things that have been discussed. I think we'll do for you is just kind of show you the cost impact for those. We'll give you kind of a scale of what's been done in the past for public safety and these others, just to kind of start framing the conversation. We'll maybe give you categories of areas that we've heard from council members to talk about, just not specific projects per se, but maybe categories that you may want to look at. Because at some point, we're going to have to decide how much is council comfortable with if we were to go forward with a bond election, what that would mean. Property tax. The good news for us on the property tax is our rates are dropping. So the impact, the median home owner is dropping. So we will present that to you. We'll give you some, I guess, scale of what that might look like. We'll try to get that into your packet now. We haven't decided on a day to talk about this. I think we could probably have the sales tax discussion first. And then maybe following that, we could get into more specifics about the possibility of looking at a general obligation bond and what might be included in that.
Okay. Thank you. Council, any other questions or comments on that topic? Okay, the next item on our agenda for this meeting, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Chief. The next item on our agenda is to hear reports on meetings and conferences attended. Council, anything you'd like to share with us? You know, we had a very busy weekend this last weekend. I saw a lot of you at a lot of events all over town. It seemed like this was the weekend for festivals. So Celebrate Mesa. Celebrate Mesa was, it was sure fun to be at Pioneer Park and see thousands of kids. That huge parking lot next to Pioneer Park was, we had a parking problem in downtown Mesa over the weekend. That was kind of fun to see. So congratulations to everyone involved in that event. That was very successful. Anything else you'd like to talk about in terms of meetings and conferences? If not, Mr. Brady, what's our next meeting look like?
Thank you, Mayor. So our next study session will be this Thursday. We will be doing more presentations for you on the budget. Now that we're done with public safety, we're more than halfway done, so that's good news. But I believe we're scheduled for transit, transportation, parks, and community facilities. Am I missing one? I think that's it, right? Okay, so that's what will be presented on Thursday morning. And then just a reminder, this Wednesday, April 18th, is Bike to Work Day. The city staff will bike around downtown or to downtown. They'll meet up with residents for a pancake and smoothie breakfast. It'll be right here in Municipal Plaza. So come on out. There's a lot of exhibits related to Earth Day, and so it's kind of a fun event for the staff here on Wednesday morning. Thank you.
Great, thank you. I'll be traveling Thursday, but I'll phone in, and Mr. and the Vice Mayor will be running the meeting. If there's nothing else, Councilor, is there a motion to adjourn this meeting? Thank you. All in favor, please say aye. Aye. We are adjourned.